It's the Quincy Harris Morning Show with Kate Fox, and we do this because he's here, my Philly lawyer. We're so excited to have Dean Weitzman back on the show. How you doing, Dean Weitzman?
I'm wonderful. Really great. It's great to be back.
Yes, we're glad to have you. Now, have you heard about this Wheat Van Service?
I hear about everything.
Okay, so in 2017, Wheat Van Service was accused of leaving a 7-year-old autistic boy in their van. The boy fell asleep, and neither the driver nor the bus aide checked the bus. Wheat Services is a subcontractor of Community Transit, which is a private, non-profit organization.
And after that ringing endorsement, they're probably, we can hear the doors closing.
Well, listen, they said yesterday, we received a letter from a mom who said her 5-year-old son was left in a van driven by Wheat Services. He was in the van cold and hungry for 7.5 hours. They found him when they were getting back in the van in the afternoon. They then took the kid to the school, not home, or not to the hospital.
Yeah. There's so many things going on there. First of all, it happened in October, I believe, just as a point of reference. And there's a claim for the child against... Okay. Because the company that transports these children has to have a procedure in place that the driver and or the second person in charge walks through the bus to confirm every child has left. If the company doesn't have such a procedure in place, they're at fault. They're negligent. If they do have a procedure and the driver didn't go and do the procedure, then the driver's negligence, and the driver's negligence inures to the employer. Because whatever negligence the employee engages in, it's the employer's negligence, ultimately. Right. So there's claims, but there's claims for the child. There's also claim for mom. What if a parent, you're a parent.
Yes.
What if a parent's child is injured? You have the legal obligation to care for your child. You must provide medical care for your child. Therefore, you're out of pocket for whatever medical care the child needs, and you have a claim independent of the child. So there's a parent's claim, and then there's the child's claim.
Mm. Yeah.
And there are two different statutes of limitations, so you got to be careful with that.
And doesn't... say if... We didn't even talk about the school yet, because if the kid was supposed to be at school, shouldn't the school have called, like, oh...
Yeah, happening?
Yeah, the kid's not here.
Like, they should have reported him missing.
Yeah.
I know. You know what the funny thing is? They should have done that for me. I used to cut every day.
That's different.
We were allowed 30 cuts a year, like 30 30 absences.
That's school, a lot.
What school was this?
Back in the day,
30 cuts.
Northeast High School.
Oh,
it wasn't cuts. You were allowed 30 excused absences without being left back to the next grade. And I would take all 30. I wanted every one of them. And it wasn't until like the 28th where finally the guidance counselor called and said, "Where's Dean been?" And so back then it was on an answering service. I came home,
got rid
of that. It was all right. We were cool. Where was the school to call for mom to say, "Where's Johnny?"
Yeah.
And that's another good question. But I don't think, my personal opinion is that the school wouldn't have liability. They shouldn't presume something bad has happened. There's just no way. I think that's extenuating the negligence too far. I'm of the opinion that it's the busing company and the driver who hold the responsibility in this instance. But remember what I said. For mom or dad, their claim must be brought within 2 years. Okay, this was in October of 17. Yep. So by October of 19, if they do nothing, they're done.
Get on it.
Wow.
They're done. The child, however, he or she has until their 18th birthday plus 2 years. So if this is a 7-year-old, there's another 13 years for that statute of limitations to run for the child's claim.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. So you got to be careful on what your rights are and make sure that you enforce them before you lose them.
Is it different money for if the child does the claim versus the parent?
It's different issues. So the parent's claim is based on what they're going to have to spend for the child's care. Pretty much an economic thing. Okay, it's not pain and suffering per se. though they may have a negligent infliction of emotional distress claim. So that means that they're put in fear that they don't know what happened to their son. Maybe they did get a call, you know, from the school.
Yeah.
And he's gone missing and they're freaked out. Yeah, they could potentially have their own tort claim. Okay, but ordinarily, I would say that they have a claim for the medical expenses. The child has a tort claim for his pain and suffering. So I believe this child woke up the next morning and said to mommy, "Mommy, I'm scared that I could have died on the bus." And that's a serious issue. That's a serious anxiety issue that this child needs to deal with now. Maybe see a psychologist for a while and work through that. That pain and suffering, even though it's not a physical injury, that pain and suffering is compensable. And that child is entitled to be compensated for that loss.
Man, my Philly lawyer, Dean Weitzman, is here. Any questions for him, give us a call. 215-515-3481. That's 215-515-3481. My Philly lawyer, he's a Northeast High School graduate.
I took every day I was entitled to, but I did eventually graduate.
Give him a call right here, 215-515-3481.
Thank you.
People have questions for you.
Let it go.
You graduated from Northeast High School.
Barely.
Yes. Barely. Well, yeah. But I shined in law school.
Yes.
So it was like it was a progression.
Yes.
Northeast High School, I was kind of like the bottom of the iceberg. And then, Temple University, undergrad, psychology major, I'm starting to blossom.
Oh, good.
Law school. Woo-wee. Well, law school, I just hit it out of the park.
Now, found your calling.
What college did you go to?
Temple.
And then?
Temple.
That's what I'm talking about.
Right.
Yeah.
Look at you guys.
Temple made.
Kink.
Kink. Okay. Well, listen, we have Leslie on the line from Delaware County. She has a question for you. Are you ready for her question?
Always.
All right. What's up, Les?
Hi. How are you? Good morning.
Good morning.
My question is, I was renting a house, and my husband caused a small fire on the outside of the house. We had renter's insurance, and the landlord is coming after us rather than going through our insurance because they refused to file a claim with their insurance company to subrogate for the damages. Can they come after us, even though we had renter's insurance?
Yes. They're always going to come after you, whether you have renter's insurance or not. The only question is, when they quote-unquote come after you, does your renter's insurance defend you? Because if it's a valid claim that's covered by the insurance policy, and you're the owners of that policy, then the insurance company would have to retain counsel to defend you. And then if there were a judgment as a result of that claim brought against you, the insurance company would pay the judgment. But again, that's all predicated upon the understanding that whatever the cause of action is actually covered under your renter's policy. So you would need to read the policy and make sure this is a risk that they are insuring. Clearly, there's some liability component to renter's insurance. For instance, if somebody comes in your apartment and slips and falls on something in your apartment, the insurance will pay those damages, will defend you, and will pay any damages that results from that loss. You've described something a little bit different. You're saying husband is on the outside, creates some fire, and I presume negligently, and that causes damage to the building. I don't know if your renter's insurance covers that risk. If it does, then they should defend you. If it doesn't, then it's as if you're uninsured for that claim, and then you could be held personally responsible.
The insurance company said that they could, the landlord could subrogate.
Well, yes. The landlord has a choice. He can make a claim against his policy and get paid, and then his insurance company will come after you or your insurance company. That's called a subrogation claim to recoup the money they spent. Or he can come after you directly. It's his choice, and he can go either way.
I see. Okay.
Does it matter what she was doing? How the fire was caused?
Ultimately, the landlord will need to prove that it was caused by them and that they did it that they were negligent in causing a fire. And so they have to prove those elements of the case no matter what.
Got it.
And then what their damages are as a result of the fire.
the damages was, they said, lower than their deductible.
Right. So if they have a deductible of $1,000 and there's $400 in damage, it makes no sense for them to go against their own insurance company because they won't pay them anyway. So yes, in those instances, they're always going to just go against you. But again, if it's a risk that your carrier has insured, then your carrier has to pay the money. And if they don't and you get sued, your carrier has to defend you. So you're fine no matter what, as long as it's a risk that your insurance company has insured you for.
Okay, so I'm going to read the fine print in the policy then.
Yep, that's always a good idea.
All right, listen, Dean Weissman, you are a wealth of knowledge.
Thank you.
Listen, if you have
Temple
any question,
made, you know, dude.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah. He said, ha-ha.
Seven Distinguished Classroom Performance Awards.
Wow. I don't even know what that means. But
I know.
Did you get the same
thing? Just know this. I was the guy who cut 29 times from high school.
Well, you knew the law.
Yeah, I knew the law. Yeah. And I bent it to my fashion.
And this is, he'll bend it for you.
Okay.
What kind of? Kind
of. Yes.
any questions you have for Dean Weissman, give us a call. 215-515-3481. That's my Philly lawyer, Dean Weissman, in the studio. How you doing, Dean?
Hey.
Good to see you.
I love you.
I love you more.
Thank you.
It got a little lovey.
Got a little lovey in here.
So you know what? People have questions for you, Dean. We have Andrea on the line. Andrea has a question. If you have a question for Dean Weissman, give us a call. 215-515-3481. What is your question?
Well, I was a renter. I rented a house in Fishtown in 2016. And after I had moved out, I received a letter from an insurance company, and it was stating that someone claimed they tripped on the sidewalk outside the house and they broke their hip. And I never heard of this. It supposedly happened, I think, around March of 2016. The letter was forwarded with my mail, and that's how they were able to contact me. So they want my insurance information to, I guess, see if they could collect from my insurance company. I thought, well, this is ridiculous. I'm the renter. I'm not the owner. So this was the owner's insurance company that was not coming after me, but, you know, they wanted my information. So I didn't think that they had a leg to stand on, but I'm just a little concerned now because I'm trying to rent another property. I'm in the process of moving, and so my ex-landlord's information is on the application, and I just want to know, you know, is there a possibility that this will come back to bite me?
What do you think? Will it come back to bite her?
Will it come back to bite her? Absolutely not. It's either a covered loss or it's not a covered loss. If it's a covered loss, her insurance company will pay to defend her and will pay for any judgments that are rendered against her. If it's not a covered loss, then her defense is I had no responsibility over that property. And, you know, generally speaking, tenants are responsible for the four corners for what happens within the unit, not outside of the unit, in the common area or the landlord's property, unless the tenant caused the risk. So if her kids left toys on the sidewalk and that's what caused the person to trip, then yeah, her insurance is going to pay for that. But if it's an uneven sidewalk that happened decades ago, then her insurance isn't, and the landlords will pay for it.
Yeah.
Under any circumstance, report the claim, give them the information, let the insurance company make that decision. They always have a duty to defend you, no matter what.
Gotcha. Now we have somebody else on the line. They were asking about if there was a car accident, if it was someone hit them, but it wasn't their fault.
Yes.
What should happen in that situation, that incident?
Well, get some information, okay? But you want to bring, if you were injured.
That was Norman's question.
Norman. If you were injured in the accident, Norman, then you should probably see an attorney so that you can have your rights fully protected. You need to get treatment for those injuries, and then determining how, you know, based upon the treatment and the injuries, it would be determined what the value of that case is. That's called compensatory damages.
Okay,
compensatory damages compensates the injured party for the damages they sustained. Then there's punitive damages. Now, talk about last week in the Starbucks episode.
Yeah.
The Starbucks Starbucks episode, you have two types of claims. The individuals who were humiliated have to be compensated for their injuries. That's compensatory. How much is it worth for the humiliation that they were forced to endure at the hands of Starbucks employees? And whatever that number is... Okay, you can, I mean, I asked in court radio on Sunday mornings, yes. I asked my listeners what they thought. I had anything from $25,000 to $250,000 for the humiliation.
Okay.
All right. But then if Starbucks is determined to have, be responsible for punitive damages, and that's really when the negligence is, takes one step higher than negligence, gross negligence, willful misconduct. Okay, when it becomes that level of action by the perpetrator, in this case Starbucks, then they may be responsible for punitive damages. And punitive damages is based upon the earnings of the company. Mm. So Starbucks is almost a $3 billion a year company.
Wow.
Yeah, that's a lot of Frappianos or whatever they're called.
Frappuccinos.
Yeah, okay. So Frappuccinos. That's $3 billion with a B. And in order to punish Starbucks sufficiently so they feel the pain, then that case might be worth $1 million or more dollars because they make so much money. If you're a company that only makes a couple hundred thousand dollars a year, then maybe only $10,000 will be enough to punish you. It yeah. really depends on the value of the company, how much they should be hit to be punished. So in this case, clearly, if there is gross misconduct by Starbucks, the value for the punitive damage claim is far greater than the value of the compensatory damages claim.
Wow.
So they should go for both.
They should absolutely go for both. Yeah.
So they should walk away with some money.
Well, I always said that, you know, like they should get paid for their compensatory damages, and maybe they can take the punitive damages that they receive and divvy that up between Black Lives Matter and the Philadelphia Police so that they could get more training
or just
in
their
those
bank
instances.
Account.
Yeah.
Or their bank account.
So they can invest back into the community.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Or their bank account.
Exactly. Well, Dean Weitzman, they can follow you. You're here every Sunday, 7 a.m. to 8 a.m.
I am. And I was told today that Court Radio was just rated number one.
Come on.
Again,
come on.
Across.
Come on.
Yeah.
Come
yeah,
on,
yeah.
Dean Weitzman.
Number one.
Thank you.
And so we're looking for your listeners, too, to come take a taste of Court Radio Sunday 7 to 8.
Yes. And they can call you on your at your office,
215-227-2727, or email me at dean@myphillylawyer.com.
I was about to say, because, man, if you want me to try to you spell your last name,
yeah,
I can.
No. Just Dean.
Dean.